All right, I'm here with Karina and Bob Trimble, yeah. And Nick and Greg and Chris composing the Flying Spiders, the new Bob Trimble group. And it's very exciting because it's actually your New York debut, right?
That's exactly right. We just played last night at Yen of the Rose for the first time in New York City, our first gig. Thanks, noisy guy.
it was a very interesting show.
Yeah, it was great.
Was that what you expected? Because you started out with two self-released albums in the early 80s. Yeah. And, I mean, did you think you would be playing New York at some point before now?
No. I never even thought I'd get in another band ever again. I thought it was just, you know, that's it. I released those albums when I did back in the 80s, and that'd be it, and I'd be done. You know, but Chris decided, you know, maybe we should get a band together because Nick was playing to the solo stuff at home. And he said, if you ever want to get together and play, you have a drummer. So, you know, I went along with it. And yeah.
God bless you did.
Thank you. Amen. Yeah, but last night's debut when we played, it was like, you know, because I had a touch of laryngitis in my larynx, so I had to sing over it. And it was really kind of like a little hairy because, you know, I'm used to just being able to belt it out without having to worry about, you know, kind of hoarse, coarse, you know, singing.
Issues.
Yeah, yeah. But we pulled it off anyway.
There was the pneumonia last week that had something to do with it.
Yeah, I had pneumonia. I was in the hospital for like 4 days, and then we had two practices and then the New York show. So I was getting shot in the stomach with all sorts of antibiotics. I was hooked up to an IV for 4 days with antibiotics pumping through me. You know, yeah.
So it is kind of it is kind of a miracle that Bob is here
at all.
Well, the show last night and today it was just really, really great, and it seems like this is what you're, you know, what
I do, what
this
we
is
do.
What you do. But why did it take this long to get to New York?
We've been playing Boston a couple times. We've been playing Worcester once, mm-hmm. and. You know, I mean, we just take every gig we're offered, and the big cities usually have us. So we just go back and forth between Boston and Worcester because we're kind of from the area, you know. We're from the Boston area, Worcester area. So to us, it's like we're centralized in between the two, and we go back and forth like kind of like, you know, pong between the two cities.
Well, know? But I was reading that when you started out, you know, your first album released in 1980, you played some shows with various bands in support of that album, but I read that you never made it even as far as Boston. You were mostly in the Worcester,
Massachusetts area. Right, never played Boston with those albums at all. We did a local regional tour in Worcester. All over Worcester County in 83. We played every place imaginable.
That was the Crippled Dog Band.
That was the Crippled Dog Band backing up the albums and then stuff off the third album, too. You know, we were playing like all year. We were just touring locally and the regional tour, and just we played even Westboro Speedway, and you know, we played some really keen places like E.M. Lowe's a few times, and
which is now the Palladium,
Palladium in Worcester.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, we played some pretty big venues, some small ones too, like American Legion halls and Repertory Art Theater. We did the Grove Street Art Gallery. We took even the small gigs we were offered and just played the big ones, the small ones, anything. Hmm. You know. We were constantly playing.
So the first band was called The Kids, right? With two D's?
Yeah, that lasted about a year. We did one song. We actually did play that live at one point at SAC Park. We played out live, and we did the one song and then split because that's the only one we knew when we put the single out, you know.
You mean you did Oh Baby?
No, we didn't we didn't even do Oh Baby then, you know.
What, was it going to a party?
Yeah, no, we didn't even do anything. We just did one song and split, but we had that single, and it was being played on major radio stations.
Really? Wait,
yeah.
What was the single?
Take Me Home, Vienna.
Oh.
And it was being played on a local community.
She played today.
Yeah, we played that today. Yeah, I kind of rasped it out, but, you know, because I got the raspy voice going today.
It sounded great. So that was the first single that you recorded? And
with The Kids, yeah. And then we ended up, you know, having a lot of airplay on, you know, not only community radio stations, but public radio stations, and some of the major stations in Worcester played the living hell out of it. I thought you had to pay them off or something with payola to get the major places to play your stuff, but it's not true at all. if they like it and they like, you know, the song and they think people enjoy it, they'll just play it.
I think it did say Bob Trimble on the single, but the kids were on.
Well, it said Bob and the Kids.
Oh, okay.
And on the other side was Bob Trimble, a solo thing that I did, Selling Me Short While Stringing Me Long, was the B-side.
So I guess the average age of the kids, I've
13.
Heard, 13.
Yeah.
What, I mean, to me, like, I think that young people just have this, like, kind of, they're not self-conscious about playing music, and they just
kind
of go for it.
They do.
Like, what appealed to you about...
That's what appealed to me, yeah.
Yeah.
But here's another story. It's that at one point, at the after we were done playing the live thing and putting out the single, we went to, like, this place over in Sudbury, the Grist Mill, for photography we're going to do for the cover, to make a picture cover later on down the road, a piece of that 45. And it's like, at some point... We all said at the same time, let's break up, all six of us.
Really?
We said it at the exact same time. We had gone through the ringer. They put us through the mill because of the young kids and an older guy. And it's like, they really were putting us through the ringer. And it's like, we all said it at the same time. It came to a head. It came to, like, the point where we just all knew we should break up because of the pressure and the tension and the stress we were experiencing from having a young band with an older man.
I mean, you must have thought of that when you formed the band, that people
We did, but we didn't think it would end in a year. We thought it would go on, but it was too much pressure, and we all said it at the same time. Like, it just, it was almost like synchronicity. Every one of the kids said it when I said it. It was over. It was period. Ended it.
I remember when we played... When we played Ralph's, one of those kids came to the show.
Yeah, actually, Kyle Kaiser
and
came to the show.
It. Yeah, and he said
he loved it.
He said it was some of the best times of his life.
He said it was the best night of his life when he came to see us play live. Because we did some of the kids. We did Oh Baby, and we did Take Me. Did we Kick Me Over? We didn't do that at the time. But we did One Mile from Heaven.
He was in Crippled Dog Band also, though.
Yeah, he was in Crippled Dog Band, actually, too.
Cool.
So he was in kind of both.
Wow, so that's so cool. So,
it is
Oh
cool.
Baby, which is also on it's on the second album,
Harvest of Dreams.
That features the kids on the recording.
Well, that's the kids' original band Omega that they. I made a kind of an arrangement with it. You sing on this song of mine, you know, and then I'll record one of your songs, and it'll swap off, kind of. You know, you'll have a band song, and you'll be singing on my tune. So the six kids did the thing, and I recorded their band Omega and then put it on the album. That was the arrangement I made with them.
That's really cool. And
it's cool. It's a cool song.
It is. And I'm glad
we
that you played it today
now.
with Chris Thompson there on vocals.
Exactly.
I'm playing the part of the kid.
Yeah, I mean, Chris loves playing and talking about the song and loves singing the song.
You can't shut me up about that song.
You really can't shut him up about the song. Live, he goes on and on and on about it. It's great because he loves it because he thinks it's a great, and it is a great song, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, it's like kids playing with a band and being badass kids.
And they were, and it's a great song, though. It's not a dud song. It's not a flop song. It's a really great song.
Yeah. Well, I always said if the Shags were boys instead of girls and they idolized Kiss instead of the Beatles, that's Oh Baby.
Yeah, Oh Baby, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
I can see that too, yeah.
So this band is a new band that formed about a year and a half ago, but
yeah.
I guess it kind of has roots back to the early 80s when Bob and Chris,
well,
you guys met.
Yeah, we...
You want to talk about that?
Well, we go back 30 years, but we were in a band not too long ago, about 10 years ago, called Flying Lion.
Oh, yeah. My band, Abu and I, invited Bob to sit in on some things, and Bob, there was like the stone lion out in front of my house at the time, and Bob said, hey, it looks like it's flying, and he ended up saying, oh, well, let's call our band Flying Lion.
So we did, and we prepared for this like event for like 3 months to play live, and we ended up going there to the Greek American Theater.
In Cambridge, Mass.,
and we prepared for like 3 months, like we played once a week to prepare for the show, and then we both got drunk before we went on and ruined the whole thing.
I don't think it was ruined.
It was ruined.
Well, Bob says it's ruined because the soundboard guy made a tape and it...
And so we're singing out of tune.
Well,
and
the thing is with a soundboard tape is like, you know, a lot of times what a soundboard is doing at a live gig is like boosting the vocals because the instruments are louder than the vocals. So the tape reflected that balance of like
heavy
vocals. Reflected
the drunken singing out of tune balance. So in other words, I had a beer like right before I went on because my throat was parched. I was dry as a bone. So
you don't like to hydrate with like water or things.
No,
like
I should have. I should have.
Only coffee or
coffee or diuretics. Only. Okay. Yeah.
But it doesn't work well, but we keep trying.
But anyway, so I end up drinking this thing real fast, and I get lightheaded and woozy and kind of dizzy off of it because I drank it right before I went on, and it's like I was all like singing out of tune and kind of lightheaded.
It was
and
not that bad.
It was, but he was even worse singing all the songs. He was singing all the songs and he wasn't even supposed to sing on any of them, and he sang all of them all the way through because he was drunk. He had like two or three Heinekens or something. Or more.
Chris is a fan. He's been a fan since...
yeah,
I guess
he knows all the lyrics and he knows all the songs, yeah.
Someone came up from D.C. to see that show.
Bad then, that John, yeah, and he loved it too. But, you know, we knew we were really kind of like, you know, headed for some troubled waters there.
Yeah. So I guess going back.
Scuttled all activity for years after that.
Yeah, it did actually for quite a few years.
Going back, though, to when you guys met, we were talking a little bit earlier that Bob, you were going around promoting your first album,
exactly,
Iron Curtain Innocence, at the local radio stations. And
yeah.
Chris was...
I met Chris. I was doing a live thing to promote the first album over WCUW. I was doing all the...
It's an interview.
Well, no, actually, it was playing. I was playing a folk guitar and or electric or whatever, and vocal at one voice and a guitar. Mm-hmm. And it was Brian Goslow, and we was doing like all the stuff off of it, you know, with just a guitar and vocal. And I didn't bring a band at the time. I didn't have a band together. So, I mean, but Brian let me go on with just a guitar and voice doing all the songs, and Chris showed up and came into the studio, into the radio booth, you know. And it was like, that was the first time we met, like 1980. And so we've known each other like 29 years.
Wow.
It's a long time, like 3 decades, you know.
Yeah, and Chris, you actually played on some of those early albums, right?
Just on the second album, Harvest of Dreams,
right.
Came out in 82, like... Bob was helping my band at the time, Prefab Messiahs.
I was producing them.
Yeah, he produced a couple tracks for us. And at one point he said, hey, come by the studio. I'm, you know, working on my second album. So Seth and I came by and ended up, you know, doing some maracas and tambourine and...
On Armor of the Shroud.
Backing vocals and things.
But then on the release...
Oh, Another Lonely Angel also.
And Another Lonely Angel too. Chris was on without Seth, but Seth and you were on Armor of the Shroud.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's really weird. In the new release, it says, Prefab Messiahs appear courtesy of themselves. I thought that was kind of neat.
Well, you told them to put that on there.
No, did I? I didn't say a word, dude.
That appears on the back of the original LP.
It does? Oh, far out. Then I might have written it down there, and they just transferred it to the new one. But I thought I had forgotten about it, and it really took me by surprise. It's kind of funny. Yeah, because they didn't have a label at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
But, well, did you, I mean, what were you going for? Because it seems like you were actively promoting these recordings at the time, going to radio stations and...
Yeah, I was going for, like, just getting the music exposed to, you know, the general public, so to see the reception of the music and so to get the music out there. You know, I wasn't really trying to be a superstar or a rock star or whatever. I just wanted my music out.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like it was well received in places?
Oh, it was incredibly well received. I was more than happy with the response I got from the first and the second album. And it's like I was actually thinking it was...
You're talking about then originally? Or?
Then originally, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because Brian played the hell out of it. Brian even thought Take Me Home Vienna was a hit. He said to me, this is a hit.
Brian from...
From CUW.
Okay.
And he played it all the time, and he played Oh Baby all the time, too. We love that song, too.
So we're talking about Greater Worcester County, generally.
Yeah, talking about the... Yeah.
But so you were having a lot of success in central Massachusetts, but didn't make it as far as Boston, let alone...
No, never played Boston, not even once. I wanted to play the Rathskeller, the Rat in Boston. The kids were too young. Even the Crippled Dog Band was, like, only 15.
Yeah, Worcester had a whole scene going. It was sort of insular, and I think it was also just... Because of the ignorance, people didn't know who to call or ask about playing in Boston.
Different
so time. only a few bands really went to Boston from the Worcester scene.
Also, yeah, not too often.
It seems like the scene was a little more new wavy and punk, and you know that was what was really kind of
happening,
especially in Worcester at the time. And like these two freaks are walking around, you know, in their respective bands, just kind of like
people wrote wondering letters back then. People didn't have MySpace and emails like you wrote a letter. And,
yeah, sure, but so. I think they seemed to me, my perception is that they were sort of musical compatriots before they even met each
compadres,
other.
Compadres, musical compadres, you know. So we've been, you know, friends. I mean, I would have liked to have continued to produce the Prefab Messiahs and make them a popular band, and that was my decision.
He always wants to play a Prefab song.
It could have
been.
Oh, yeah.
We could have been better than the Beatles.
Could have been, actually. But you know something? We ended up going on as a Prefab Messiahs at Ralph's in Worcester at Chicago Square Diner. And it's like we were the Prefabs that night, you know. We played all their songs.
Oh, that was a reunion.
It was a reunion.
Wormtown last
reunion.
Year, right? Or a year and a half ago?
A year and a half ago. April of...
May.
So we were Prefabs all night long. It was great, you know.
Well, like, we built ourselves as the Prefab Messiah / Bob Trimble. And that was my way of tricking Bob into, like, getting on stage again and figured he'd
it
like
was
it.
Was kind of trickery on your part, like studio trickery.
But it worked, and then you got into the idea of playing live again.
Yeah, live trickery. That's but great. Anyway, you know.
Did you do Bob Trimble songs at that show?
Yeah, we did, actually.
About half and half.
Half and half.
Cool.
Half my stuff, half Prefab Messiah stuff. But the thing I was amazed at with the most is, because that's when it was like we did AKA the Flying Spiders, because we're really not the Prefab Messiahs. We're the Prefab Messiah, and, you know.
Well, and a little bit of Gary War is in this group.
Gary War is all over this band,
Prefab Messiah's 2008
He
franchise.
Was in Prefab Messiah's, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We always joke, even like in the early days of the Prefabs, we joked about, oh,
and
well,
Nick, too, and
you know,
Karina, too.
Because we were always like, used like McDonald's iconography is sort of like, you know, the name Prefab Messiahs came from, you know, figures like Ronald McDonald being the Prefab Messiahs of, you know,
corporate world.
Yeah, the friendly face of the corporate world or whatever. So
right. So the Flying Spiders, all of us here, went on as the Prefab Messiahs that night
in
May.
Flying Spiders emerged as a name because at the end of this joint show, Prefabs and Bob last year, we finished our last song and Bob says, thanks, good night, we're the Flying Spiders, and that's the first any of us heard of it.
Yeah, right. Because we're really not the Prefab Messiahs. There's only one Prefab Messiah original member when we were doing this reunion thing, and the rest of us are kind of just fake Prefab Messiahs, you know?
Bob doesn't buy into the idea of the Prefab franchising thing.
No, but there's only one Prefab, and that's Chris. I mean, the other Prefabs, you know, Seth and Mike, you know, and Bill, they just didn't come to the show, and we all filled in for them, and it's like, you know, it was kind of, it was almost like Bob Trimble and the Prefab Messiah, you know what I'm saying,
So how did the five of you come together?
Greg and Nick and
Karina were all in the band?
Yeah, it was at that show that we all did get together.
Well, I had met Bob, we did a proper, like, record release party in Boston. Uh-huh. Which I spun records at, I was DJing at, and Bob, it was the night I met Bob. You know,
the record release for
the two reissues. Of
the reissues. Yeah. Tell him what you told me.
You met him the same night I met him?
Karina
met me the same night. I met Karina the same night.
I went
Nick.
To say happy birthday to Chris.
Yeah, it was Chris's birthday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was Chris's birthday that night. So. But what's weird is Nick said to me, you know, you still have energy, right? I said, yeah. And he said, you're not dead, right? And I said, no, I'm not. He said, you're still alive, right? I said, yeah. And he said, then what's the problem?
Yeah, because he's hemming and hawing about not, he's like, I don't want to play, in a band. It would be fun, but I'm like, just do it, man.
He said, yeah, you're not dead. You still have energy. Yeah, you're still alive, right? And I said, yeah.
And then we obsessively talked about the Beatles or something.
Oh,
like
crazy.
Two hours.
And all of the recordings on 456 Ampex tape that we thought were really recorded well for their day.
We talked about high impact tape for a while.
Yeah.
But anyway, it actually had, like, I didn't think much. Well, I mean, I thought much of Bob. I thought he was a really personable, great guy. But then I didn't know how serious he was or if he wanted to really.
He talked me into coming back. He talked me into forming a band.
And we were doing the Prefabs thing and didn't have I don't know who. Well, Seth ended up not being able to do it, and so we only had Bob on guitar, so there's a lot of leads and a lot of stuff that we need filled in for guitar, and I knew.
So Greg came in and.
Greg was on his way, literally moving back.
He was traveling across the country, right?
He was literally moving back from LA, and I called him, and like, just, he like crunched the numbers.
He was learning the songs.
He learned
the
songs up in the car on the way up from New York to Boston.
Yeah, I remember you guys talking about that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You were here with Emily Moore.
Repeated the interview. Yeah, but. Yeah.
Emily drove, and Greg was learning the songs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a guitar in the passenger seat, learning all the tunes on the way up on the road.
So then that was the band.
It's crazy, and that was the band, yeah.
Cool. So, but yeah, I'm wondering kind of the same thing that Nick was asking at the record release show and for the reissues. Like you obviously have this passion for playing music and have so much great material. Like, why? Well, how did things kind of fizzle out in the 80s?
Oh, I can tell you why, because I had viral pneumonia for about a year and a half.
When was that?
That was way back before, like a couple of years before I met these guys at the record release party, Karina and Nick, right? And I really wasn't feeling all that well because I had flu 6 months after that. So I was sick for 2 years when I was living in Northboro.
But you're asking more about the 80s, though, right?
Yeah, oh, 80s.
I guess you... there is this kind of third album's worth of material,
right? There is, actually,
right?
Yeah. It's not out in the States. It's not out here. It's out in Denmark.
And you were playing on some material from that tonight.
We were playing, like, yeah, we play a lot of stuff off of that third album.
It sounds really, really good.
I love the third album because it's a rocker, and I love playing rock and roll. We like rocking out, too. And it's like, you know, but the album's not out in the States. We're hoping, actually, a friend of ours, Douglas, is going to release it this summer sometime. On his, what's his label, Yoga?
Yoga Records.
Yoga Records. He's releasing, Life Beyond the Doghouse over here.
Well, it might come out under a different name.
Yeah, it might come out under a different name. It'll be the same album.
It's a good name.
It's a good name. We're thinking of calling it Chief Crippled Dog or something crazy like that.
So those recordings were up until 1986?
Actually, yeah, I think they went up as, we actually recorded as Crippled Dog till like 1990, and we've recorded quite a few albums, but that's the first one we recorded. And we're doing a lot of stuff off it. We're doing at least four songs I can think of off the top of my head.
Which ones?
We're doing Angel Eyes off of there. We're doing Undercover's Man. We're doing the Camel song and Livewire.
Cool.
So we're doing, four of them.
Yeah, they come across really well in this
setting. I love
this
those
setting.
Songs. The songs are rockers. They're great. We love playing them,
I guess after that, have you continued writing music?
He really
music?
Wants to know why you
I wrote this.
Yeah. That's, well...
He really wants to know what happened in the years between then and now.
Okay, yeah. Actually, I have written a new one, but we're so focused on some of the old stuff and some of the stuff on the third album that we really like to play as rockers. I got this new one called Funny Money, but we haven't had a chance to get to it yet. You know, I've written one since we formed this band, and I think it's a pretty good one, so eventually we'll get to it.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is, because it's a new song, so, it's a great one, and so it's like, it's kind of a funny song, too, so, it'll cheer us up a little, I played it for Nick and Chris.
Yeah, we did a dry run of that one.
We did a dry run, and they loved it. They think it's a great song.
Great.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll play it soon.
I was going to rewind and say something else, because there was a theme in the car on the way to New York that things happen in threes, and
then,
but the night of his CD release, Nick met him. I met him. You got in touch with Gary. Mm-hmm. Gary was learning the songs. I was obsessively listening to both CDs for a long time. Became friends, and then
You wrote and told me over the internet.
A buddy of his just said, "Why don't you have Karina sing 1 Mile?" I almost died.
Yeah, and she did. She did at the first show. In fact, we've never played 1 Mile from Heaven or Galilean Boy or Glass Menagerie Fantasies though. Karina singing on it live. We've never done them without her.
But I didn't know that. I didn't know that you met Nick
in this new band.
Night.
In this new band, yeah.
That's and news to me.
She's always been with us from the beginning since we formed. But she's as much a member of the band as anybody else. It's just that she doesn't sing as many songs and stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's mostly kind of like I have to cover the songs that are on the album, third album or whatever the albums. But it's like, I'd love her to sing, some of the songs by herself, but she don't want to do it. She doesn't want to.
But, Karina, weren't you saying earlier that you wanted to learn, was it Glass Menagerie Fantasy for your other band?
I wanted to, and originally. Then I went to his place, and he was trying to show me how to do it, and I was like, I just threw my hands up.
It was complicated, very complicated. It's not really complicated, it's simple, but there's a lot of chord changes in it, and it goes crazy throughout the whole thing, changing chords. They're not all that complicated of chords, but there's tons of simple
we
chords.
We couldn't pull it off.
Well, you probably could, but, it depends.
That's all history now.
All history now.
Don't need to cover it.
Right, but they do a song called Galaxies Revisited, 28 Degrees Taurus, that I think is as good as Glass Menagerie Fantasies any day of the week. And it's like, it was one of my favorite songs before I even knew that Karina did the song. I was listening to it at home for 6 months before I even you know, met Karina.
I was at his house and I was walking out of the bathroom and I said, "What? How'd you get this?" And he said, "I got it off the radio.
Radio. I taped it off the radio. Didn't even know
it was
her."
That's my band.
28th Degree Taurus.
All of a sudden, I was there live at one of their shows in Boston at TT the Bear's place and heard him play it and knew it was her by just hearing it live. But before that, listening to
it
6 months before that.
You heard it at the show first.
And you told me, I know this song. And I'm like, how could you know this song? It's a local band and you live out of range of the local radio stations.
Crazy.
But I was taping it off a local radio station in Wormtown from my house in Northborough. So it just came over, and I when I heard him play it live, it was the first time I knew what band it was and that Karina sang it. And it's like one of my favorite songs.
Driving home, I was like, what
just
happened?
I know. It was a freak out.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, it seems like you guys have a lot of good energy in this band. Do you think that this is going to continue and...
Hopefully we always play these venues that a lot of people show up to. They're small little venues, but they're always packed to the rafters, you know?
Yeah, the Thursday night show was packed.
Yeah.
Although I felt like a lot of people there didn't know why they were there.
They just came to see the band, to see how, you know, how they react to it. Or maybe just they had heard a couple of tunes here or there and come out to hear the band play. But, you know, we always play these places that get packed. They're small places, but they always pack them to the hilt. You know, so that's the kind of thing I like. I don't want to play huge places. I'd rather play small venues that are packed to the, you know, to the roof.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of cool that way, because then we have a small little following that's kind of nice, you know?
Yeah. I think it's probably a larger following than ever.
Right. It's larger than we used to have, even in the old days. We didn't have that many people, you know, like following us around. They always seem to, the shows sell out wherever we play, so it's good.
So did it surprise you in the 90s when like the Parallel World reissued?
Actually, I set out to do that intentionally. That that was one of my you know, kind of like projects, my pet projects, to get all the best stuff of both LPs on one, you know, compilation.
One CD.
Yeah.
So that's Jupiter Transmission.
Yeah, so I went out of my way to try to find someone to put it out so that it would be all together and people can hear all the stuff on one CD. So I made a conscious effort to put that CD out and went out of my way to, you know, make sure eventually that it was done. So
good.
It wasn't by accident. They, you know, I searched it out and to see if I try to get it released. So,
but then the Radioactive,
that was a total pirate bootleg, you know, unofficial ripoff of my stuff. And that was the England one.
Yeah,
it was a needle drop, as they say. They just copied it from an album and didn't even get in touch.
Right, and I made nothing off it. None of us made any money off of it. We didn't even get sent one, but that's even not the problem. The real problem is that it's an inferior recording because it's a needle drop and it's not as good. And the other problem is that, you know, it's like, as far as that goes, it's like, gee, I mean, the guy didn't even make any overtures to even ask or, you know.
Yeah, he just put it out.
He just put it out without asking. It was total. We blew it out of the water on purpose. We put this new Harvest of Dreams out with the colored cover and the better recordings and the remastering. That's kind of like a glorious recreation to blow it out of the water, and we did, and they're out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's out of business.
I think it was more.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I think the Hendrix Experience Foundation or whatever helped.
They helped too.
They helped put them out of
business.
Well, I think
too,
it was probably the 1-2 punch of Bob Trimble and the Hendrix
estate. But
both,
that'll do it.
Right hook, left hook. So
yeah, I guess their approach was, since they were based in the UK, they thought that they would just release stuff by American artists
and get away with
not
it.
Not contact them.
Or, and get away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the few UK things they did do, they did actually work things out with the artists, but probably like 98%
all
of
the
their
other
stuff
out of the country stuff.
Yeah, they Australian American.
They were just pirated and ripped off. So that they're out of business, and the thing is, it's like, you know, I think it's good, because even if they had offered us a really low sum just to put it out, because I've taken some pretty bad deals just to get the music out, some good deals too, but I mean, I think the Denmark release was a really bad deal for me, but I wanted the music out over there, you know, so it's not like I wouldn't have probably agreed to something that was halfway reasonable anyways, but they didn't want to even make that trip, you know.
Well, I think people might have assumed that you just disappeared.
I think probably when assumed I was
here,
dead.
But you've been in like the same, you know, same town or same general area.
Same general area for like, you know, 35-40 years.
So what do you do when you're not playing music?
Waiting to play music and stuff. You know, I just stay at home and, you know, I kind
of
like
you listen to a lot.
Listen to a lot of music, and you know, so I do listen to a lot of new music and old music and stuff that I like, and I get into it.
Anything you're particularly into? I mean,
Right now, I mean, I love the Ramones. I rediscovered the Ramones. I thought they were tremendous then, but I think they're even more tremendous now. You know, I mean, I'm kind of revisiting all the old bands and listening to some other material I haven't heard from them before. So I thought they were phenomenal. I'd get into Guns N' Roses again.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're phenomenal, too.
Agreed.
Yeah. You know, Spaghetti Incident is, you know, just knocking the socks off Rockwell.
Did you hear Chinese Democracy?
No, yeah. I don't think I have. Is it good?
I haven't heard it.
No, huh? Is it good?
I heard one song. I wasn't crazy about it.
No?
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't heard Chinese Democracy, so
like
I don't
a flop,
know.
But.
Well, there might be a few good songs on it. Who knows, you know? Even if there is, it'll be worth it because you get a few good Guns N' Roses songs, you know. Three more you never had before, you know.
Wow, so what else?
Oh, I'll get into all sorts of things. I was getting into, like, the Numbskulls from Worcester. They're a local band that plays Wormtown a lot. They're pretty good. They're really awesome, actually. They're a great band. And then, you know, some new stuff, you know, from around the area. You know, and some old stuff, too, from some of the old punk bands, like the Aggressions and Commandos. So the Commandos still play. So we saw, actually, they played that gig that we did with the Wormtown 30th anniversary.
These are all Worcester bands he's mentioning.
Yeah, the Numbskulls play, the Commandos play. They're still together, the Commandos, and they were from, like, 78. So
they're old school punk.
They're old school punk, so but they're still together. It's really nice because they got into listening to all their material, too, and it was great.
Well, so there are a lot of related projects, and I mean, I know Chris is in, like, hundreds of bands.
Yeah.
He is, actually, in a lot of bands.
And,
Spandex Ballet, he's in the Lothars. right, he plays theremin in the Lothars, and he does this another band you're in, too.
What, do you mean Concord Ballet Orchestra?
Concord Ballet Orchestra, that's
like,
it.
I was like, maybe Bob just thought he was in Spandau Ballet.
Yeah.
Maybe, no, it's a Concord Ballet, yeah.
Do some shows with Gary War?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do some shows with Gary War, Nick and Chris.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I will provide a lot of links in the playlist for people to check out Bob Trimble and related projects. And I'm really, really excited that you're back playing music again and made it to New York.
Yeah, I'm surprised we did because we were stuck in traffic and bumper to bumper gridlock for the last 3 miles for 45 minutes. So it took us 15 minutes and, you know, a mile to get to the destination. We were right there,
he
too.
Smoke in the car.
Yeah,
so
and I was going,
flipping,
I was
flipping his wig.
I was flipping my lid. I was like crawling out of my skin. My skin was starting to crawl because I felt like, you know, I have a touch of claustrophobia, and we were stuck between, like, a couple tractor-trailer trucks and a brick wall.
Never say Triborough Bridge to Bob.
Never say Triborough Bridge to Bob ever again.
What was the exit? Metropolitan?
Metropolitan exit? But it took us, like, 45 minutes to travel 3 miles.
So, wow, all this time, the only thing that was holding you back was the
traffic.
Oh, we came down dozens of times, but always turned back because of the traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been in traffic since 1990.
90, that's the way I've taken so long
like
to get
Charlie
to
on the
City.
MTA.
Yeah, Charlie.
Well, thank you, everybody, so much for stopping by.
You're welcome, very much, Jason.
Thanks.
It was fun, Jason.
Us.